You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, we're back. Well, at least I'm back. Good morning. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Lisa Wysocki in Ashland City, Tennessee. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, October 13th, episode 3795. Good morning, Horse World.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's been a while since you've been here, actually.
It has been. Yeah, yeah. I've been busy.
That means Jamie and I aren't taking enough time off, is what I get out of that.
That's true. That is true, yes.
Well, we're going to get caught up with Lisa because she's got all kinds of updates on movies and things that, and broken bones and things to get caught up on. Also, we're going to speak with your farrier today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Jay Morris. He's fabulous.
We're going to talk about fall hoof care and how that might differ from summer, spring, or winter hoof care. Also, our rescue of the month is One Horse at a Time Draft Horse Rescue, and that is in Montana. And also, wait till you see our Adopt-a-Horse of the Month is really cute. So we'll get into that. Do you have time to do a post show?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I do.
Obviously, we haven't talked about what we're going to talk about, so we'll talk about whatever. Whatever comes
we'll
up.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll do a post show for the auditors. It's been a while, so we'll do that too. If you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's one-on-ones, especially Wednesdays with Tad Coffin, I highly recommend you do that. Jamie sat down with Tad, but it wasn't even the horse stuff I found the most fascinating. It was this story about his mother in World War II. What a fascinating family. I think that's probably something he's never told before. And, of course, he's an Olympian. But even his stories about the Olympics and all that stuff was just fascinating. Mm-hmm. I think she got out of him things that he's never talked about before. So it was one of her best interviews, I believe, in
I
all
so.
15
yeah.
years.
It was really good.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to that, it was last Wednesday, Tad Coffin. Take a listen. And then especially listen to the beginning about his mom and his family. It's just crazy. So I am back from vacation. Had a great time in New Mexico. It was my first time in New Mexico. Jennifer had been there before. Jamie is now in the second week of her clinic. That started today. And judging by the pictures and everything, and she texted me this morning, said everything's going great. So sounds like her clinic is going well. She'll be back next Monday. I got a question about vacations. You wait so long and you plan for a year, however long, for your vacation. And then it seems to be over like that.
Oh, I know. There's never, ever enough time. And you're just getting settled into it.
Yes.
And then it's time to go
and
back.
And it's come home. And yeah, you're excited to get home, but I don't want to go back to work right away.
Yeah.
We always do now. We allow a day. So at least we got back on Saturday and had a day at home. But it was also cooler in New Mexico than it is here. So, you know,
yeah,
one thing I didn't
good.
Realize, and I don't know why, it's maybe because I had never been there and never thought about it, is that Albuquerque's at 5,000 feet. New Mexico or Santa Fe's at 7,000 feet.
Yes. Yeah. You don't think about that because you think about Colorado being, you know, way up high. But,
yeah.
you know, American Horse Publications had a conference in Albuquerque a few years ago. And I went and I'm like, well, I'm having trouble breathing.
Yes. We did a hike and we went up to about 9,000 feet. And I got to tell you, it's you being a Florida person. Had definitely trouble breathing. Jennifer did a two-hour trail ride in the mountains as well and had a great time with Kim, by the way. Thank you to Ashley and Zach and Levi. Levi is the little one.
Yes.
And what a good kid. We stayed at their house for three days, and we heard him cry once in 3 days.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and he's little. He's like a year old.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, he was a lot of fun, and I like kids that age. I don't like them so much when they get to junior high age. I'll take them back when they get to be about senior high age. But at that age, I like playing with them and having fun, and he was a blast. And thank you to Ashley and Zach. Took us out to dinner, and we had a great time. So, and we did a lot of different stuff while we were there and got to see the Balloon Festival, which is the largest hot air balloon festival in the United States. And there were hundreds. And you get up at 3 a.m. and then you go to the balloon festival and you get there about 4:30 because
so
it's
light there.
No, it was dark.
It's dark
when you
okay.
get there, but it's just, okay. They get 1.5 million people visit in 10 days.
Wow.
So there's about 80,000 people a day that go to this. So that's why you have to get there early, is for parking.
Got it.
And we get there early and, you know, it's dark out and it was a beautiful day. We picked the right day of the week. Every other day was cloudy. This was not a cloud in the sky. And then they have a drone show about 5:30 in the morning. And I had never seen a drone show before. This must have had a couple hundred drones. It was big.
So what did they do for the drone show?
They do designs in the sky, and they showed pictures, and they did, you know, New Mexico, and, you know, they give you messages, and it was fun. It was just fun. Because it's amazing to see how they do it.
Yeah.
I don't know, obviously computer programmed, but if one drone gets it wrong, it's screwed up, right? So,
well, yeah.
So, but it was great. I mean, I'd never seen that before. And then what they do is they put up about 10 balloons in the field and they light those before it gets light. So you see them glow. It's called a glow. And then those balloons take off before light. And they're kind of the test balloons, but it's really cool to see them up at night, you know, with the fire thing going and all that. And then they're the test balloons to see what the winds are like for the other balloonists, because there's so many. There's hundreds.
Yeah.
And then they all set their balloons and take off. And this particular day, it wasn't windy, and they were kind of just hanging around. They would float away a little bit, sometimes come back, you know, depending on the level they were at. Some landed in the field where they started. It was crazy. It was kind of a crazy day that way, because they were all just kind of hanging around. I don't know. They do bump into each other, but I guess because they're soft, it doesn't matter.
So what was the coolest balloon?
They had a cow that was enormous. Was the size of about three regular balloons. I took a picture from the backside, and it was anatomically correct. This one had udders and had a butt and the whole works right there. I had to get a shot of that. It's where we were standing. But that one went up, didn't go very high, and then came back down quickly. I don't know if they were having problems with that one or not. But these balloonists do this every morning for 10 days, and sometimes in the evening. So it was, you know, and you can take rides. There were hundreds of people taking rides. And it's not cheap at the Balloon Festival. It's about $500 a person.
No.
Yeah,
no,
you can get it much cheaper if you're not at the Balloon Festival. But there were hundreds of people taking rides. It was fun. I'm so glad we did it. It was on our bucket list. We've been to Balloon Festivals before, but not. I mean, they
not
had so many different shaped balloons and, you know, animals and all different stuff. And it was just fun. It was fun. And they had a huge festival thing going on at the side there, and then everybody leaves by 9:30, 10 o'clock, and you're done.
So, oh my goodness.
Yeah,
wow.
Because they've landed or come back, you know, because they take off at 7 and they're up for a couple hours and run out of fuel and come down. But you know, it was really cool.
If you're up at 3, then at 9 o'clock, you're ready for lunch.
Yeah, I was ready for a nap. So we did have a good time. It was a lot of fun. And, you know, I think one day or 2 days would be good. I don't know that I would have to go back more than that.
Yeah.
It was fun to see. And then we did some other stuff. I'll talk about one of the other things we did and who owns it at the end. And let me just say, Lisa, your books are being made into a movie. There's hope for you.
Ooh,
To be wealthy one day and do what this author did. And
Okay. We'll
talk about that at the end of the show.
Okay.
But thank you to Ashley and Zach and Levi, and also to Kim and Ray, some of our terrific auditors. And they live in California. They've been on every cruise with us, or almost every cruise. And they came out to spend time with us, too. So we had a lot of fun with them as well. Let's do, though, some Daily Winnies. We have one auditor birthday. I think before I left on that Friday, I got all the auditors for last week. If I missed you, happy birthday. Today we have Rosemary Root, who it's her birthday. So happy birthday, Rosemary. And also Heather Wallace, host of the Adulting with Horses podcast. Happy birthday to Heather. And we have to give a great big congratulations to Joy, who, of course, hosts the Retired Racehorse podcast. Joy had her babies. That's
Yay!
Right. She had twins, and apparently she had her babies naturally, which is unusual for twins,
yeah.
And everything went fine. Like, she said it went like clockwork. It was perfect. So,
wow.
So
wow.
Joy is very beautiful and very perfect herself. So this just fits. I mean, I told her that too. I said, of course you did. You know, I checked in with her yesterday and she said the babies are doing great. It's all fine. So,
wow.
So good for Joy.
For
yeah. And so we have Helena and Archer. So congratulations, Joy, on your perfect babies. And I did see a picture of them. A lot of babies go through that old man stage before they get cute. Hers started cute.
So. Yeah, I saw the pictures too. Yeah, they look just fabulous.
As a matter of fact, she wrote to me and said, she said, you know, I'm so glad my babies didn't have to go through the old man stage. And I knew exactly what she was talking about. So.
Yes.
But, you know, they always get cuter after the old man stage. She didn't have that problem.
Eventually, yes.
I did write back to her. What I wrote back was, of course yours didn't go through the old man stage. So so congratulations to them. They deserve. And Pie Guy. That's her husband, Pie Guy.
Pie Guy. So,
yep. All right. He doesn't have a name. We call him Pie Guy.
Well, as a lot of the auditors know, my mom, who was 102, passed away in August, and my daily whinny goes to everybody who reached out. I was just blown away. So many of you just reached out with a text or an email or posted on the auditor page, and it really kept me going. I was just so grateful for the support.
We felt like we knew your mom intimately because we had talked about your mom so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and her love of racing. But one thing that I did want you to share is the week before she died, she got to go to the races. So.
Yeah, so I flew. It's so weird, Glenn. You know, you just sometimes have to trust your instincts. I just felt, I had just left Minnesota. I've been back in Tennessee like a week and a half, and I just felt I needed to fly up and take mom to the races. It was just this really big feeling. And so I got a plane ticket, and I usually drive, but I flew up and the flight was horrible, but story for another day. And we went to the track, and she won some money, and she got to visit with all of her friends, and that was on a Sunday, and she was just great. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday she was a little bit off. She had some visitations from people who had passed away many, many years ago. And Friday she was good, and then Saturday morning she was unresponsive, and then passed Saturday evening. And so, Glenn, you just can't ask for anything more than that. I mean, you know, if you're just going to go, just be sharp and with it until the very end. And
especially
that's what she
at
was.
102.
102, still living in her house. And you know, I mean, I just was so blessed to have her for so long, and that she was, you know, able to enjoy life up until the end.
Yeah. She mm-hmm. got to do all the things she loves doing in the last week.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she did.
Good for
her.
She
did. Yeah, it was good.
You know, she's still playing the ponies, right?
Oh, she absolutely is.
Every day now. She's visiting all the tracks around the world at this point.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's just doing it. So good for her. And you know, I mean, it's a sad time, Glenn, for sure. But then on the other hand, it's a time for celebration too, because, you know, it she just was so wonderful and just was so sharp and you know, so healthy until the end.
Well, you know, you had thousands of hugs coming your way.
Well, I felt it. I really did. I really did. And it was just wonderful. And thank you and the Horse Radio Network for the gift basket, which I know it kind of ties into my mom's passing, but was kind of a gift.
Well, it was also for another reason. There were two reasons we sent you the basket. So we sent you one of the wine baskets with a lot of food in it because...
Yeah.
While cleaning out her mom's house, she decided to break some things. So yeah.
Yeah, and not like China either.
No, you probably could have afforded to break that.
So, you know, I mean, I was tired. And just people don't know, I'm an only child, and I don't have any really other family. So when it comes to cleaning out 70 years and three generations of household stuff, it's me. And so I was getting ready to drive back to Tennessee, and I'd put a security system in the house because I wasn't going to be there. And there was an extension cord where an extension cord had never been ever. And so, of course, I tripped over it, and I crashed upright into a built-in china hutch, and the sill on the china hutch kind of wedged between my ribs and broke two of them. And then I flung my foot forward and broke a toe. And so that was on a Saturday, and I... I drove back to Tennessee. I didn't go to the emergency room, Glenn, until Tuesday.
I don't know how you drove Tuesday that night. Far with broken ribs.
You know, I was pretty sure they were broken, and I was pretty sure the toe was broken. But what do you do for broken
nothing.
Ribs and toes?
Nothing. You can do nothing for either one except nothing. Try and rest.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that. But, you know, not on my platter for a little bit yet. So, but by Tuesday, I was thinking, well, maybe I did something else. Maybe I
Well, and they do worry about that with broken ribs is that they puncture something.
Yeah, so I thought, well, maybe I should go to the emergency room. So I went to the emergency room in our little town here. For 3 hours, I was the only person there. I was the only one there. I got lots of attention. It was great. So, and I will say they have their x-ray room in the hallway. it's a tiny, tiny little emergency room. But
you know what they do in emergency rooms at the big, like the one I go to now? They have the x-ray. It comes to you in the room. You don't even go anywhere. They just
really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we're not that technically savvy yet.
So how many did you break?
I just broke two ribs. And so I'm
in
like
the back
four
or front?
In the front. Yeah. Well, kind of on the side, on the very side. Yeah. And so, and I'm okay now, you know, except I'll twist or I'll lean forward or something, then I get this excruciating searing pain that, you know, takes my breath away.
Every one of us with broken ribs is now cringing a little because
I know it just
how about coughing and sneezing those first couple days?
Oh, that was miserable.
Yeah.
I will say there's not much worse. Even childbirth was not quite as bad as trying to cough or sneeze with broken
sneezing
ribs.
Is super you try
bad.
And hold it back and hold it back, and that even hurts.
It's bad. So, yeah. So it's,
I'm glad you're feeling better. It's been, 4 weeks now?
Yeah. So the
it's going to hurt for a while.
It will. The doctor said, so here it is. He said, well, usually 6 to 8 weeks, Lisa, but, you know, you're not all that young anymore, so you're probably on the 8-week side of it. Thanks.
He doesn't know that you were back to take care of the horses the next day.
So. Yeah, well, I was, but.
So but, let's talk about happier things. Your books are being made into a movie. Where are we at?
Yeah, so we're still planning. The plan is still to film in Lexington the month of May. And
next year?
At Lexington, Kentucky.
Next year, but 2026?
2026.
Okay.
So everything's going according to plan. And what's very exciting, I can't share too much information, but there's an old antebellum mansion that is featured in the book. And the house that's going to be in the movie is actually owned by one of the listeners of Horses in the Morning.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, now you got me thinking, who is this?
Yes. So I can't tell you, but...
I don't know who owns a mansion.
But it's very exciting, and the support from the Lexington community has been really, really good. They've got a short list of the actors that they want to play certain parts. They haven't actually done any, like, reads or, you know, that type of thing yet.
So that's interesting, because I don't know how soon they cast the cast before they start filming. I always thought it was way out, but apparently not.
Well, it can be, or it can be quicker. So we have a volunteer here at Colby's Army who's an actress. She's been in a lot of movies. Her name is Lola Kirk, and she sometimes is like, okay, I can't come today because I just got cast in this movie and I'm flying to, you know, Finland or someplace.
Oh, so it's real quick.
So sometimes it can be quick. Huh. So,
are they looking for people that have written before, or doesn't it matter?
So it doesn't really matter. The writing that's in the film is pretty basic, and I just told the producers whatever skills they need. If they don't ride, I can teach them in a couple of days.
It's probably better so, that way anyway.
well, to make it look make it look good, I can't teach, you know.
And
everything.
And
in a couple
do you
days,
keep
but,
reminding them about fake Winnies? Have you reminded them a thousand times about
we
fake
had
Winnies?
The director, Brad Etter, he's just this amazing young man and so talented and so gifted. But he has promised me no fake Winnies. No fake Winnies. And I think I told you, you know, Glenn, when I got the second round of the script back, I said no fake Winnies. They had changed all the Winnies to nays.
Do they know there's not a difference? Do they know that?
They know. Yeah. And so I wrote back in my 13 pages of notes, very kindly, I might say, I said, Okay. No horse sounds other than farting and pooping. That's exactly what I wrote.
Yeah, those are allowed. Those we'll accept.
You know, those we can do. Those we can do.
So will there be like a big premiere that you might invite?
Yes. So the premiere is going to be at Asbury University in Wilmore, Kentucky. We don't know when. That's going to be probably in fall of 2026.
Are Jennifer and I going to get it? I'm inviting myself right now.
Well, you're invited.
Okay,
you're invited.
Right. Yeah.
So,
you notice how enthusiastic she was about that.
It'll be okay, Glenn. I guess you can come. But we're going to be looking for extras too. There are some scenes where. So if you want to be an extra, just let me know. I don't have really any say or control, but I can.
Jamie and I can play podcast hosts if there's any of those. Open.
That would be fun. Well, so there's this scene where there's a press conference. So we're working with
reporters asking questions.
Yes. Yes. See, and we're working with American Horse Publications, or at least we've pitched it to them, about getting some of their people out for the scene, because that scene is actually going to be shot during the AHP conference, which is going to be in Lexington
Perfect.
This year.
Yay. Yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah. So, but there are some other scenes. There's some restaurant scenes and just some other scenes where we're going to need some extras. So if you want to be in a movie, I can pass it along to the producers. That's all I can promise.
All right. That's great. And then I did want to mention one other thing before we get to our first guest, and that is you have your yard sale coming up. And I know some listeners have gone to that in the past.
Yeah.
It's this weekend, right?
It is this weekend. It's the Colby's Army Yard Sale Extravaganza. We have 10,000 square feet undercover.
People, must be a million things. That's stuffed into that barn. We saw it when they were getting ready when we stopped by. I was like, this is a lot of crap.
This is a lot of crap. But we've got some really cool stuff this year. We've got signed watercolors by... drawn or painted by country music artists. We have an antique spinning wheel, a miniature antique spinning wheel. We have a lot of horse tack, I'd say mid-range to training range, nothing on the show level, but we've got a lot of horse tack for sale. We have, gardening supplies and tools and baby items and clothes and
You must have had a million books the last time we were there.
We have, I can't tell you how much stuff we have. So, thank goodness for our wonderful volunteers. We have, right now, the barn is full and the tents are full. And we have 70 boxes we have not gone through yet.
And this is all donated to Colby's Army.
Donated. Yeah. All donated.
And this is your big fundraiser of the year.
It's our big fundraiser for the year for Colby's Army. And we do therapeutic riding and homeless outreach and organic gardening. We just help the community, however the community needs to be helped. And, this is our biggest fundraiser. And we have so many wonderful volunteers, which I'm really thrilled about, because our barn is full, our tents are full, and we have 70 boxes right now that we have not gone through, and the sale starts on Friday.
Well, so if you're in the Ashland City area, which is north of Nashville, you said some Kentucky people rode down last time too. So.
Yeah, we're near Bowling Green, Clarksville, Tennessee, Fort Campbell.
Matter of fact, we went from your place over to Jennifer's brother's in Clarksville. It was a short ride. It wasn't that long.
Yeah, 40 minutes maybe. So
Friday,
we had a lot of auditors come.
Saturday, Sunday?
Friday and Saturday, 9 to 2. I will say this, come early if you can, because Friday at 9 o'clock, we'll have 40 or 50 people lined up outside the door.
Okay. All right, good. So, well, good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks.
Appreciate it. All right, let's do our first guest. Can you introduce him?
I sure can. So today we have our Colby's Army Farrier. We have Jay Morris. He's been a farrier in Middle Tennessee for 35 years, and he serves almost all breeds, all disciplines, all levels of riders and horses. And he's taught horse hoof and leg physiology and anatomy at Austin Peay University, and he's certified through the American Farriers Association. Well, hi, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing great, Lisa, and thanks for asking.
Oh, absolutely. And in full disclosure, Jay is our farrier at Colby's Army and just a wealth of knowledge. So I'm so excited to be talking to you today, Jay. So we're in the middle of fall season and we've got some horses whose feet look like crap and some who look pretty good. So what kind of changes do you typically see in the fall in the makeup of the hoof or in the holdup of the hoof?
for most of the United States, other than the extreme dry areas, the feet really start to transition in a positive way. The fall weather is typically much easier on the horse than any other season, fall and spring, obviously, not extreme hot or extreme cold. The feet tend to be about the best from, obviously, geographics would play a role in that, but the feet are going to transition to a higher quality, better foot from now until spring, whenever that is in your area. They grow a little slower, but I think the flies play a role in the summer, the stomping, the kicking, keeping the feet more brittle. And then obviously nutrition and genetics both play a role in that.
Oh, absolutely. I
hope that helps.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think a lot of us have, you know, some ongoing issues with, you know, thrush or abscesses or white line. What should we watch for, like, in the fall when it comes to that kind of thing?
Well, it's easy to let your horse go in the fall easier because the obvious, the what you see from the top of the foot is going to look better than it would have all summer long. But we tend to neglect the bottom and looking at the bottom of the foot to see if you have any, even a healthy footed horse can get a slight obstruction in the white line from a rock, a stone, whatever works its way into the white line and allowing a bacteria or a crevasse to get started in the white line. And that can be a problem and not cause the horse to be lame, but can have to be aggressive to get rid of that later. So it's necessary to check your horse's feet periodically from the bottom. Pick them out, clean them out, and get a good view of them. And then thrush, we deal with a lot year round. A lot of these feet, as the mud, we start to get a little more mud and less dirt. The foot stays packed and where it can't get any air in the fall, winter, and spring. So it's you know, we need to stay after that as well. Looking, keeping the foot cleaned out, maybe daily, and just taking a good observation of what it looks like down there.
Yeah, for sure. And Jay, as you know, we've decided to go all barefoot with our horses some time ago, but I know you do a lot of shoeing too. And so do you see a difference in the fall with the horses who are shod as far as any of the thrush or the white line, or do you even transition shoes into something different as winter approaches?
Well, when you talk about winter, this is optimum riding season in most parts of the country. People are that have put off riding because it was extremely hot might have gone barefoot in the summer, which we do advise people that if you're not going to ride them, get the shoes off if the horse can handle that. And then start back with this time here. Then you start with an extremely healthy foot. Kind of go into the same thing with winter, depending on where you are in the country. Some parts are so brutal that there's not a lot of riding done from December through, you know, March because of extreme cold. Advice to somebody like that is to take the shoes off those horses if there are ones that can handle that. You'll start out in the spring with a healthier foot. The feet are, because when you do that, you've dodged all the bad, unhealthy effects that have been caused by shoeing during the summer months. And then also it's a great time to fix your problems as the foot starts to get healthier. When we tended to fit that shoe a little tight in the summer because we were consistently losing it because of hoof quality, now we can go back to fitting that shoe proper like we want to. And I didn't mean undershod. I just meant you'd like to put a little bit more shoe on that horse, but you were scared to because you didn't want to tear the foot up one more time this summer. So, yes, I hope that helped with that as far as fall. The feet tend to be best from that right now of the year. They're getting their best.
Well, that's unfortunate because we have one horse, Lex, as you know. Feet look terrible year round, and if this is the best he's going to look, then we're in trouble.
Well, and it may be, but you know he always kind of looks like a stick of dynamite's been put under his foot when you get there, and then when I leave, I feel a little bit better about it, but. Yeah, he just wasn't, when they said feet, he thought they said eat, so he didn't show up.
Yeah, he didn't. You know,
that's right.
We use some you know, hoof conditioners and things like that. And what about, you know, in the fall, should we be using the same thing that we used in the summer or the winter? I mean, is there something different that we need to be doing as far as hoof dressings?
I hate to be an advertisement for any of them. I like simple and old. I will say that Phoebings has probably been around as long as any of them. But what I like,
I think it's older than all of us, actually.
Right. I'm not promoting the Phoebings, other than I'm going to say that I had two different scenarios with that. But one of them is I had a young lady. Actually, she lives right down the road from where I am now. That was a young rider. Had this horse that had horrible feet, bar shoes, venting at an upper level. And the feet just went to muck one year. And I told her, and she took me there. I said, just put a hoof dressing on at least once a day, whatever, and let's put some iodine in it, like from the pharmacy, to keep the bacteria that would grow in the warm months from not being able to thrive as well. And that horse's feet made a turnaround. And to this day, that's been 10 years ago. That horse has since passed. But she puts Phoebings with iodine on her horse's feet every day and never has trouble with her horse's feet. Wow. So that's where I feel. I mean, I've told people that over the years, and I'm not going to say it's fixed all of them, but this is a lady that's going to put at least 5 days a week. They get Phoebings on their feet with iodine in it. But there's a ton of stuff out there. There's a lot of European, I can't even pronounce the names of the hoof dressings and all that people swear by. I think when the foot's dry, like it is now, in this part of the United States, we're dry. We've been dry. August, September, and October can be our driest months. And then we start with the wet season. I think the conditioners help more in the dry than they do in the wet.
I got it. Okay. So I want to ask you, speaking of wet, we're coming into a time of year when a lot of our northern friends are getting snow like crazy and everything's wet all the time, right? Is there a magic, I know there's a lot of wives' tales, but is there a magic way to keep the snowballs out of your horse's feet other than pads?
Yes, sir. No, sir. Well, they say if you're riding them, then I have heard people that swear by the fact if you spray Pam.
I know, this is why I brought it up.
Yes.
Cooking Pam.
Yes.
That it will come out, or it is easier to get it out after. And it's the same with the gray stone that people ride in arenas, the stone dust that's kind of taking the place of a lot of sands. They say it will slough out easier, like it's supposed to. But snow, definitely. I have seen that work where somebody picks a foot up where you would have to take a hoof pick and a hammer to get it out, and it just pops out.
Okay.
Just pops right on out.
And it's just oil, so it's not bad for your horse's foot. So
probably good for it. Yeah, probably good for it.
Yeah.
As somebody who grew up in Minnesota, yes, we used to use lard.
But snowball pads are great. It's just you know, where we are, that's not a demand. I'm in Middle Tennessee, obviously, so that's not a demand here because we get such small snow. But I have shot in areas where there is a lot of snow, and it's pretty much standard. People if you're showing, you're putting snowball pads in.
Are there anything negative about the pads?
No.
Okay.
Unless you're just not putting something quality underneath. I mean, because that's where the bacteria and harmful stuff would thrive. Now they've got so many different products out. We've got a packing that we need in our hands, too. It's like I don't know what you call it. It turns into a rubbery type substance. You put two equal amounts in your hands and knead it up and put it under the pad and cover the pad and nail it on. Or then we have liquid pores that mix as they go through the tip. And you squirt that under the pad and it fills all that void and keeps all that negative out.
Okay.
So. And some of that's medicated, comes pre-medicated with copper sulfate inside incorporated in it.
Okay.
That's awesome. It's just amazing what they've come up with. I mean, as compared to, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, so many new things, you know. So, Jay, if you had one piece of advice for people listening, you know, for fall hoof care, what would you tell people? If you could only do one thing, what would it be?
I think more than anything, be paying attention to what's going on underneath, because it's the you're going to see a much longer toe look a lot healthier this time of year, and it's easy to overlook that and go, man, his feet look great. He doesn't need any help. I would keep my shoeing interval or my trimming interval similar, if not the exact same, no matter what, even though the holidays are coming, it's easy to put it off. But it's important that you look at what's going on underneath the horse's foot, underneath.
That is amazing. It's so common, common sense, and so simple, you know.
Well,
that's why it's amazing.
We get lost every year. It's like the month of January can be my biggest month of the year because everybody neglects their horse the entire holidays from Thanksgiving through Christmas. Not everybody, but a lot of people put that on the back burner because they have so much else going on.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Well, Jay, I can't thank you enough. I know how busy you are. So we'll let you get back to it, but we really appreciate you. I appreciate you coming out, to Colby's Army and it's been 20 years, I think, with various therapeutic riding programs, that we've known each other. So thank you.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. And I sure hope I was helpful.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
Well, I want to thank you to our partner, A Home for Every Horse, for helping us set up our monthly look at rescues and sanctuaries. It's ahomeforeveryhorse.com is where you can find them. They're a sister company here at Equine Network. And this month, we're chatting with Jasmine Shin, who is with One Horse at a Time Draft Horse Rescue. Well, hi, Jasmine. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, One Horse at a Time Draft Horse Rescue is where? Where are you located?
We are in the Bitterroot Valley in Corvallis, Montana.
Well, that's pretty, I bet.
It's beautiful, especially the snow this morning.
Well, you weren't originally from there, though.
I'm not. As you can hear by my accent, I'm not from here at all. I'm actually from Germany.
So, how long ago did you come from Germany?
I moved to the States with my husband back in 2009, but okay. I have been back and forth to the States since I was 18. So long
gotcha.
Time.
Gotcha. Okay. And so how'd you end up in Montana?
My husband is originally from here. He's from Livingston, and it's a job that brought him and me to the Bitterroot Valley. And here we are today.
Well, great. And so how long ago did you start the rescue?
I started the rescue right at the beginning of 2018, kind of fell into it. I went to an auction here close by in Missoula, an hour north of us, and there was actually happened to be a Percheron going through that auction that I was looking at, thinking, what a beautiful horse. And somebody that was sitting next to me said, don't buy that horse, he's going to go to the canner. And that kind of started my questions. What do you mean, canner? What do you mean, don't buy him? What's wrong with him? What's going on here? And so I started to do some research into, you know, auctions and what happens to horses at auctions sometimes. And that opened a broad area of this whole horse rescue thing, so to say.
Listeners know I love draft horses. How did you, did you intentionally go into this because you had experience with draft horses, or did you fall into the draft horse thing?
Not really. When we moved here in 2014, I didn't even have any horses, but I've always had the love for the big horses. Like when I grew up in Germany, I had a horse that I was riding that was a very tall horse. And of course I had known about the Budweiser Clydesdales like everybody does. And so I've always kind of had that desire in my heart to have a draft horse of my own. And I did get one in 2016, my very first Black Percheron. And so I've always wanted to once I knew I was going into horse rescue, specialized in the big draft horse breed, and especially also with me having done some research and knowing that there is such a big need out there for those big guys especially.
So what surprised you about draft horses?
That's a good question. Well, I don't know if surprise is really the right word, Glenn. It's more like all the problems that come with them once they are not wanted anymore and discarded, like medical issues from starting them too young, overworking, people not properly feeding them for their size. It's more those things. And you know how in the horse world we refer to the draft horses as the gentle giants, which is overall true, but unfortunately in the rescue world I have come across so many that are not quite yet your gentle giant because of what they have experienced possibly in the past and how traumatized they are when they come here.
And that, you know, that's it gets much tougher when you have horses like that have been through those things when they're 18 hands tall, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really does. So you, how many do you have there right now? Or do you try and keep?
Well, the
I know they're two separate, completely different questions.
Yes, they are. So
ask Lisa. Lisa does therapeutic riding, and I think she always has more horses than she probably needs to.
Right. So it's obviously not so much one horse at a time anymore because I do have 36 with me at the rescue now.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, we actually have 58 horses total. I have a few in foster homes. And so, yeah, 58 is the total number of horses within one horse at a time right now.
You didn't jump into the deep end of the pool. You jumped into the middle of the ocean.
You know, I didn't really quite know where this was going to take me. I just knew from that first experience here at that first auction I attended locally that I wanted to help. And I wanted to help actively. I actively wanted to go and seek out those draft horses that do
50
need help
plus
after
is very
auctions.
Active. You succeeded in that.
Right. And so, since 2018, I mean, we're just about to finish our eighth year and we're getting close to having helped 500 draft horses. And while to some that doesn't sound like many, to us, for a rather small organization that we are, it really is a lot of horses.
That's a lot of horses. So, now, I have to ask you, because I'm a horse husband, and I'm always partial to horse husbands, and I know that yours was an Army veteran, right?
Correct.
And but he got, you know, thrown into this horse thing, too. How does he feel about all of this?
He supports me fully in what I do, but when I told him that I was going to start this draft horse rescue, he asked me, did I know what I was getting myself into being a public figure?
Are you sure he didn't say, are you crazy?
I told him, well, how bad can it be? Boy, have I found out over the past 8 years how bad it is. But he's not a horse person, but he's told me he will always support me as long as it doesn't affect our family or us financially. And, you know, that's a reasonable request there, I think.
Yeah, I think it is.
And, but, you know, my husband, I catch him here and there and have over the past years interacting with the horses and walking up to them and petting them. And it always puts a smile in my heart and thinking, you know, there's that veteran doing that. How is that healing effect of the horses coming through right now, subconsciously, you know? And so, I don't know if I turned him into a horse lover, but he definitely supports me and what I do. And I do appreciate that. I also like to say I break everything and me and the horses break everything and he fixes everything. So that's
what
really
we do.
Wonderful to
That's
have.
Our job.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Lisa has a therapeutic riding program, has worked with many veterans. So she'll tell you that it does work. You know,
it does. And you know, as you both know, I mean, everybody knows, you know, just being around a horse is therapeutic, you know, and the fact that your husband is choosing at least occasionally to go up and interact with the horses. I think that's fabulous.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and we've had meet and greets here and open houses, and I've talked to one or the other person that is actually a veteran, and they soak it up. They stand there and they, if they can just put a hand on that horse and feel what's coming through for them. And then to me, that's what it's all about, you know, sharing them with the public and letting somebody experience that.
Especially draft horses too, because they're such novelties. You know, they're guys horses, right? I mean, you see them and they're novelties to begin with, and then you stand beside one and you go, oh my God, right? So,
yeah,
absolutely. And I actually hear that a lot here, where people want to come and see the drafts, and then they come and they're like, oh my God, they're so big, I didn't realize that. And so, you know, pictures and videos don't always show that. And so it is quite something to experience them and their fullness and their large, big bodies. And it's definitely an experience. While all horses are great, there is something special about that draft horse, for sure.
Mm-hmm. We always highlight one of the horses that is up for adoption, and you picked one with the best name today. So yes. Tell us about Dawson, not Dawson. First of all, do you know, is that something you named him or did he come with that?
I did. Okay. Yes. So, well, kind of, I guess. So Dawson's story is a rather interesting one. I received a phone call from somebody in Texas, actually. He came out of Texas. And there was an older couple that purchased him from a horse trader. Known or unknown, I don't remember. But this older couple was looking for a carriage horse. They wanted to do nice carriage rides, you know, kind of, they've seen it somewhere on TV and thought this was the most beautiful thing to do. So they purchased this horse. And when the horse got to them, it seemed like the horse was nothing that they described, not the sweet, gentle giant they described. And so they had the vet come out, and the vet only confirmed to them, this horse is way too much horse for you and you need to get rid of it. And it just so happens that on that fateful day, one of my adopters in Texas was at the vet office that day, and the vet asked her, do you know anybody who would take this horse? And she said, I do. And so I received the phone call from the vet. And I said, okay, and because I purchase horses from an online horse auction in Texas a lot. And so I told the people at the time, you know, the next time I have horses coming to me from Texas, I would contact them and see if they still had their horse and they were still in need of placing him. And if so, I would take him. So fast forward a few weeks, that happened, and the horse actually came here. And it came with a copy of a registration paperwork. And so I took that and I started doing some research on the horse that I was supposed to have in my pasture now. And his name was Dawson. And I posted it on Facebook. I found out he was supposed to be this very fancy six-hitch horse. And I sent off a DNA test to see if that was really the horse. Well, in the meantime, a lady that I had worked with before, and she's a friend of the rescue out of state, commented on that post of mine and said, no, I have Dawson. And I was thinking to myself, I'm going to have to call her and tell her she can't do that. People are going to go crazy. So she called me actually before I was able to call her. And she said, Jasmine, I bought Dawson with the same paperwork for the same amount of money from the same person. And we're like, oh my goodness. And so long story short, we both did DNA tests on our horses. My horse is now Dawson, not Dawson. And her horse is actually Dawson.
Okay, it makes a lot more sense now, actually.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And how many times have people bought horses from dealers that the paperwork was copied from another horse?
And that's just a really sad thing in the horse world, you know. So.
And with grays like that, a gray horse, right? Unless they have unique markings, it's it's you could get away with it, I think.
Yes.
So this one for adoption is 17 plus hands, a big one, but not the biggest. All right. So there are bigger. Yes. And how old? Do we know?
He's in his mid-teens. Okay. You know, we estimate that based on their teeth.
And he is a Percheron. He's definitely Percheron looking gray, turning white. Which they usually do. But now the other thing is this horse really does need an experienced person, right?
He does. Okay. And he's actually been with me here since January of 2023. He came 400 pounds underweight, took me some time to feed him up. And as I said earlier, you know, there is a little difference in feeding a draft horse, might need a little more. And Dawson was just not the most handled. He didn't come as this gentle giant that many times they're portrayed to be. And so it took a lot of time for him to just trust us, you know, build that trust, let us approach him, let us work with him some. And a lot of times I do that by turning them out with the herd, learning from the other drafts in the herd that, you know, the human interaction is not so bad. It's okay. And you're safe here. And sometimes that just takes a really long time. And then, you know, and we have to start, we as in me and some of my helpers here, have to feel comfortable with handling the horse because obviously we want to be safe. And so it took quite some time before we even started working with him on haltering and leading and doing all those things. And, you know, eventually he came around and he's still not the gentlest of giant. He is big, he is tall, and he will let you know that. And so you gotta, you have to have experience and know what you're doing. But here some months ago, I said, you know, let's take him to a driving clinic and see how he does in fact drive. And he drives beautifully if you know what you're doing. And so, you know, and with the amount of horses I have here, it's hard to work with all of them all the time. So then they get to sit again, and that might go away again a little. And then they might need a little bit of a refresher again, as is the case with Dawson. But he is a beautiful horse. He's stunning. He's big. He's stout. And like I said, he drives beautifully. And he should have a home where someone can enjoy that.
So Dawson can be, I'll put a link to directly to Dawson's page on your website. It's number one, horseatatime.com is the website. If people want to help out in some way or volunteer or do any of that, is the best thing to do to go to the website and contact you through that?
Yes, there's a contact form on there. And also my phone number is listed. And we're always happy to take names and numbers about volunteering. I don't have an established volunteer program, but it's always been my plan to do that. I just haven't kind of really figured out how to do that. I've had a lot of people come and volunteer one-on-one. I do have a lot of people that just come to visit, want to meet the herd, you know, take a tour, and I do that by appointment. But there's always some need that needs to be met that I'm always happy to have people help me with.
So the number one, horseatatime.com is the website. And there's a bunch of other horses also for adoption on there. One that I was attracted to, Remington, who's 18.3. So that's
I can't even imagine.
That's a big point. Thank you, yes. Jasmine. We appreciate you joining us.
Recharge your training program with Equestrian Plus. Equestrian Plus brings together top riders, trainers, and professionals onto one video platform. Watch over 5,000 how-to training videos, clinic and event footage, exclusive training sessions, and more featuring top experts including 5-time dressage Olympian Stefan Peters, 5-time Olympic show jumper Ann Krasinski, Olympic eventer and silver medalist William Fox Pitt, and more. Join Equestrian Plus now and use promo code HRN15 for 15% off your first month. Visit EquestrianPlusPLUS.com to subscribe.
Well, I got to say before we wrap up here that we did a train ride out in Santa Fe. It's a tourist train, so it goes out and back. And, you know, Santa Fe is so different than here in Florida. You know, first of all, it's very brown. And everything there is brown. The buildings are brown. The houses are brown. Everything's tan or brown. And it's so different every time we go to the West Coast because of that, because it's just not like where you or I live. The forests are a little different.
Yes.
So, and you know, it's so interesting because they have huge mountain ranges there that go up to 10,000 feet. So it's, I think the Rockies start a little bit north of there, but they have their own version of mountain ranges that are very tall. And we did, Jennifer got to ride up some and we got to hike up some, but it, just being in Santa Fe at 7,000 feet and altitude doesn't bother us a lot, except when you're walking around town.
Right, right.
So,
except for your breathing, right?
Yes, that little thing. Thank God I had my asthma fixed, you know, because I had 3 months of really bad over the summer with my asthma, and I've got this new medicine. It's working great. So I didn't have a trouble. I didn't have any trouble at all, thankfully. I was a little worried about that. So we take this train ride, and I got to tell you, when we're on the train, they said who owned the train, and I thought, oh my God, I had no idea. So George R.R. Martin of Game of Thrones fame, who wrote Game of Thrones, lives, or has one of his houses, I'm sure there's many, has one of his houses in Santa Fe. And apparently he's bought up half the town. So he owns a restaurant, he owns a bar, he owns a theater. Well, you know, one of those old-timey theaters, he bought that and restored it. And then this train was going to get sold, and the tracks, which they share tracks for a little ways, but then they have their own tracks that go out a long distance. And he apparently bought the train and the tracks. He bought everything.
How cool is that?
Because he didn't want to see it go away. And there's these old train cars. They're about 100 years old. And he kind of had them fixed up. And then he hired a whole bunch of artists to come out and paint the train and the cars. So the entire thing is painted. And I'm not... If you ever get out there, you have to check it out. I'm not going to spoil it, but you will think a little bit about Game of Thrones when you see the painting.
Okay.
And then they put on this horn that makes very unusual noise that you'll also think about. I won't ruin that either. But it was, he apparently rides the train sometimes. The volunteers said, yeah, we get to go up and talk to him. And he's very distinctive looking. So,
oh, yes, he is.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize he was, you had mentioned he's 77 years old now.
Yeah, I knew he was in his upper 70s.
So Game of Thrones fame, that fame came a little later in life. He would have been in his 60s, right?
Or for sure. 50s. Yeah. Yeah. And so you wonder how long he'd been thinking about that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Plus, he keep writing, you know, they're doing a prequel now that I just saw the first trailers for that's coming out next year.
Yeah.
To Game of Thrones. They did a, what's it called when they do one that's later in time? A postquel? If it's
post-quel?
Prequel, is it postquel?
I guess it's a postquel.
We're making up a word here. I don't think that's a real word.
Yeah. Somebody will know.
I thought of you, too, when they said that, because I thought, when you get rich after doing this movie, you'll be able to buy your own train.
Oh my goodness, if only I could.
That's what it's going to be like for you after they make yours into a movie, and then a TV series that's, you know, the most famous in the world.
Well, we can only hope, Glenn. We can only hope, but that would be amazing.
You know, you look at what you're getting paid for this, and you know, it's in a scale of what a person like George R. Martin gets paid.
Peanuts.
Yeah. I guess they get paid a lot more when it's very successful like that.
They do. Yes. They have more negotiating power.
Yeah.
So the agent on the project just said, you know, Lisa, you're only as good as your last project, and you don't have a last project.
And that's why you're not getting paid much.
That's true. Okay.
But George R.R. is doing all right, I bet. Doing all right.
I'm sure he is. Well, I've got, so does the train have a name? Does it, can I look it up?
Yeah, it's the Sky. Now you're catching me. What's the name of the train, Jennifer? Was it Sky? Sky something.
Sky something?
Sky something Railroad or something in Santa Fe. I don't remember, to be honest.
Okay.
But yeah, that's the name of it. It was fun. We had a good time. We did the sunset cruise, except it was cloud and no sun. Sky Railway, it's called in Santa Fe, which makes sense because you're basically taking a train in the sky at 7,000 feet. So, but you get to see the mountains and the valleys on both sides. It was really cool. It was neat. It was worth doing.
I bet.
And the people work on it were very, very pleasant, very nice. So yeah, I would definitely do. We do all the trains. Jennifer's family was a train family. So her mom worked at the railroad. Her dad loves nothing better than trains and railroad stuff and goes on every one that's ever existed. He loves trains. I mean, loves trains, belongs to a train club of old guys who just talk about trains. So she got that from her family. And we've been on every, if there's a scenic train ride, any place we vacation, we take the train.
Oh, wow. So,
which I kind of enjoy too. It's just, they're all a little different and fun.
Have you gone, have you done like the Canadian thing? We're going all
across? No, I want to, except it's like, you know, it's like 10 grand. So it's not cheap. Yeah. Trains are not cheap. They advertise them as, you know, mass railway and all that stuff. But most of the time you look at the train prices and you could fly.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you're paying for the experience, I think.
I guess. But Amtrak?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not the experience so much. Yeah. But anyway, we do the scenic ones. We always do the scenic ones. And we've done a couple in Colorado. And one of the best ones we've ever been on, your train talk, it's a new podcast. One of the best ones we've ever been on was in Sedona, Arizona.
Really?
Because Sedona is beautiful anyway. I mean, it's one of the most beautiful places in the country. And anybody that's ever been there says that. The Red Rocks and all that stuff. And the train goes through gorges of that and down and, you know, through the valleys and the gorges. And it's cool. It is really cool. It was one of the most impressive ones we've ever done. So if you ever get to Sedona, do the train ride. It's worth it.
I will.
All right. Very good. Have you ever, do you go on vacation ever? We'll talk about that in the post show. We got to go.
Okay.
We're running out of time. I don't remember you ever saying you've been on vacation, but we'll find out a little later. Wednesday, I have Ashley joining me. She's going to fill in on Wednesday. And then I have a special co-host that's never co-hosted anything before. She was a guest of mine on the WISA podcast I do called Retail Roundup. And she was a guest of mine and said, oh, you have to co-host with me sometime because she was a lot of fun. And she's very Western. So for all you Western people out there, join us on Friday. And she's going to, she's never done really bad ads before, and she's going to have to do it for her first time. So I told her, you better listen to it because you got something coming here.
Yes, yes.
So that's on Friday. And then Jamie will be back on Monday. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate it. What's your website?
LisaWysocki.com.
You can find all the books and everything there, right?
Yep, absolutely.
All right. And the closing music's supposed to play now. Oh, there it goes.